It's Monday, November 2nd, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. First things first, we want to remind you that in many places across the country, it is Election Day tomorrow, so check your local news to see if there's any ballots that you need to be turning in tomorrow at the polls. Most specifically, we want to remind the cannabis community tomorrow in the state of Maine that you need to be voting on Question 5. This is an initiative to determine how to provide dispensaries and registry identification cards to the medical marijuana patients in the state of Maine. For more information on the measure, check out MainePatientsRights.org. Also, the city of Breckenridge, Colorado will be voting on Measure 2F. This is a measure to decriminalize the personal adult possession of marijuana up to 1 ounce within the city limits of Breckenridge, Colorado. A similar statewide measure passed overwhelmingly in Breckenridge, even though it failed statewide in Colorado. And tomorrow, the California Supreme Court will be hearing oral arguments on the case of People v. Kelly. This is the case that decided whether or not the state has the mandate to change the limits, or to enact limits, I should say, on medical marijuana in the state of California. The appellate court decided that they could not, since an initiative can only be changed by citizens, not the legislature. We'll see what arguments the Supreme Court will listen to tomorrow online, and you can watch it yourself live by following the links at our front page at norml.org. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere. Time for a look at our cannabis community calendar, brought to you at normal.org/calendar. And a lot of our events have a Missouri flavor today. We start on Tuesday, November 3rd, when Kansas City Normal will be protesting against the Combat Anti-Drug Tax. They are protesting the renewal vote on Question 1, which they say has already cost $800,000 just to put on the ballot. For more information, check out kcnormal.org or call 888-KC-NORMAL. Joplin, Missouri Normal will be having their monthly meeting also on Tuesday night at the Blackthorn Pub and Pizza. For more information, check out joplin-normal.org. Speaking of Joplin Normal, on Thursday, November 5th, they're having a movie night at the Joplin Public Library showing the movie The Union, The Business Behind Getting High. Also on Thursday, Philly Normal has their open meeting at 4722 Baltimore Avenue, the A Space in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Check out phillynormal.org for more details. And on Saturday, the Fall 2009 Missouri Normal Conference is taking place at the Missouri University campus Ellis Library Auditorium in Columbia, Missouri. All the Normal chapters from the Show Me State will be represented, with special guest speakers including Dan Vietz, Sean Randall, and Paul Armentano. For more information, check out Missouri Normal on the web through our links at normal.org. Also on Saturday, Michigan Normal is having their fourth quarter meeting, where all of the Michigan Normal subchapters will be meeting to coordinate strategy and look forward. Check out minormal.org for more information. And if you'd like to have your Normal Chapters events read on the Cannabis Community Calendar and displayed on the National Normal website, send me an email at stash@normal.org. It's a Normal Shoutout. Today our Normal Shoutouts go out to the state of Mississippi, where I just received an email that said, please bring Normal to Mississippi. Well, it doesn't quite work like that. We don't descend from on high with a cadre full of lawyers in limousines from Washington, D.C. and install Normal Chapters. Normal's all about grassroots organizing from the bottom up. It's you getting together with your fellow citizens and deciding to stand up for your rights as cannabis consumers. So all it takes is you and four other people who feel the same way to form your own Normal Chapter. So if you're listening in the state of Mississippi, send me an email at stash@normal.org, and I'll collect the emails from all the people in Mississippi, put you all on a mailing list, and we'll see if we can't get you together to communicate, organize, and form one or more Normal Chapters in Mississippi. We'd love to have some representation there. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, including a look at the state of Oregon and our chapter in Portland beginning the state's first cannabis cafe for registered medical marijuana patients. In Michigan, employers are looking at medical marijuana and how that affects their rights to test for drugs, as well as our patients' rights to work for a living. And from Athens, Georgia, we get a story of a victim of alcohol poisoning and how that relates to what the punishment would have been for marijuana. For our Daily Toker Tunes, we're bringing you some new music this week, all from the website GarageBand.com. Today we feature an Australian hip-hop artist named Mia Muse and her interesting little rap called Dr. Chronic. And for our Normal newsmakers, we're going to bring you a two-parter, a special debate between our own Chris Goldstein, the executive director of Normal New Jersey, representative of Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey, longtime activist with Philly Normal, and of course the founder of this podcast, The Daily Audio Stash. He gets engaged in a debate with a medical marijuana opponent and mops the floor with him. We'll present the entire thing in two parts, part one today and part two tomorrow. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Oregon Normal set to open first Patients Cannabis Cafe. From Willamette Week. While most Portlanders are all too familiar with cafes of the coffee-serving variety, there's a new cafe coming to town worth noting. It's Oregon's first cannabis cafe, a concept common elsewhere around the globe, and it will be run by Oregon Normal. It's scheduled to open Friday, November 13th, naturally at 4:20 p.m. Sadly, only members both of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program and Normal can partake in the experience. The cafe is legal under the guidelines of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, but maybe they're accepting applications for servers. Snacks and items from sellers like Stoned Made will be available, along with a full range of pot to sample. The cafe will be a resource for the medical marijuana community, and Oregon Normal also hopes to provide seminars and classes there. This new canna business operates under two premises from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. One, cardholders are allowed to freely exchange marijuana with each other for, quote, no consideration, end quote. That is, no buying, selling, trading, favors, gifts, or exchanges. It's the reason you've never heard much of federal interference with Oregon's medical marijuana program. There's no commerce involved. Isn't it interesting how dangerous marijuana is to the authorities when people are making money off of it, but when it's exchanged freely by over 25,000 cardholders, there's not enough danger to the public for the feds to be interested. Oh, and two, patients are allowed to medicate so long as they are not, quote, in public view, end quote. A private club for a membership-based organization in a building with its windows covered by drapes is out of public view. Oregon Normal will be strictly carding all entrants to the cafe to verify cardholder status. We discussed the cafe with Madeline Martinez, director of Oregon Normal, on the last Normal Show Live. She tells us, quote, it's exciting because there are so many of our most vulnerable patients who have no real social outlets. They can't really go to concerts or clubs because they can't medicate, and nobody can really enjoy themselves if they're forced to sit in pain. At our cafe, patients can relax and meet others, learn about the program, sample different strains of medicine to find out what might work best for them. They can get some snacks and drinks and even purchase some great stuff from HerbAge and Stoned Maid and others that help support the community. End quote. Michigan medical marijuana workplace rights considered. From the Detroit Free Press. Employers are facing tough issues as they try to navigate the state's fledgling medical marijuana law, such as the difference between smoke and ingest, or whether company policies on drug testing still apply in a state where 63% of voters approved a new law last fall allowing medical use of marijuana. One section of the law says a registered user can't be, quote, subject to arrest, prosecution, or penalty in any manner or denied any right or privilege, including disciplinary action by a business for the medical use of marijuana, end quote. Another portion of the law says, quote, nothing in this act shall be construed to require an employer to accommodate the ingestion of marijuana in any workplace or any employee working while under the influence of marijuana, end quote. A third section says no one can possess or use medical marijuana on a school bus or on school grounds, but smoking pot is expressly prohibited only on public transportation or in any public place. It's unclear whether it's okay for a certified user to eat, for example, marijuana-laced brownies in a public place. Why the hell not? Geez, what do you think happens? The super potent not your father's Woodstock weed causes the brownie eater to strip off their clothes and run naked through the park? I can understand an objection to smoking marijuana in a public place where others may not appreciate the smell, but this idea that we need to confine people who use a certain medicine to the shadows is un-American and repulsive. My father is disabled, and among the handful of pills he must take every day are some Vicodin, a very addictive, very powerful, potentially fatal drug. Yet nobody's telling my dad he can't pop open his pill bottle at the public park when it's time for his medicine. And why should they? If an employer were to require his employees to be free from the influence of Vicodin while on shift, we could certainly understand that. But would he require that they not take Vicodin once they get off work? How people who've never used marijuana perceive marijuana fascinates me. People who can openly tolerate parking lots at taverns and a .08 BAC law freak out over the idea that a pot smoker might drive a car. People who can accept a Marinol bottle with the warning, until you know how you'll react to Marinol, don't drive or operate heavy machinery, implode at the thought of a medical marijuana patient driving a forklift or a school bus. People who make jokes at work about their hangovers or go to work sick loaded on antihistamines and pseudoephedrine will regale you with the notion that a person who fails a marijuana metabolite P test is an unsafe worker and a drain on company productivity. The law seems pretty clear to me. No disciplinary action for using medical marijuana. Accommodating at work would mean building a smoking tent outside for your cardholders and allowing them to take breaks to medicate on the job. Nobody is suggesting that. What we're suggesting, and the law supports, is that a person cannot be fired, not hired, or punished solely for being a medical marijuana patient. If you drug test them and they test positive for marijuana metabolites, that test simply reveals that they are a medical marijuana patient, a status you cannot punish them for. How much clearer could it be? If you catch them with weed on the job site, smokable or in a brownie, you have a cause for action. But if you just catch them with inactive metabolites in their pee, let them work. Passed out, publicly pantsless in a puddle of piss in the Peach State, preferable to a pocket full of pot. From the Athens Banner-Herald. An extremely drunk man passed out early Sunday morning in the lobby of the Comfort Suites on North Avenue, said Athens Clark Police. The 32-year-old man was found at 2:35 a.m. on the floor with his pants around his ankles, asleep in a pool of his own urine, according to a police report. When police woke him up, he became abusive and was arrested for public intoxication, the report said. My first thought? You never read any news headlines about passed out potheads with their pants down in public. We'll accept as legal a drug that has this effect on people, but we must lock up the people who sit at home and fire up a bong while watching TV at 2:30 in the morning instead of passing out in hotel lobbies. My second thought, isn't it interesting how the 32-year-old man's name isn't mentioned in this news piece? Want to bet that if it were a marijuana possession offense, we'd know his name, middle initial, and home address by now? My third thought, the crime he's charged with is a misdemeanor that will at most net him 60 days in jail and a $500 fine, but it's very likely he won't do any jail time at all. If he'd been caught with a joint in the hotel lobby, he'd lose his driver's license for 6 months and be forced to complete a drug rehab program. If it wasn't his first time caught with a joint, it's all that plus a year in prison and a $1,000 fine. Which of these two people do you think should get some counseling and shouldn't be driving? The guy with the joint, or the guy passed out pissed drunk in the hotel lobby? My final thought. If the guy had cancer, AIDS, MS, glaucoma, or epilepsy, and had been caught with over an ounce, he'd be a felon and subject to up to 10 years in prison, 20 if he's within 1,000 feet of a school, plus 4 more if he'd used a cell phone.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we believe in spreading the growing truth about cannabis. One way we reach out to the cannabis community is through 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who share our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at music@normal.org. We'll help promote your gigs, recordings, and websites, and maybe even interview you about your musical career. Now, here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Mia Muse is Tokyo-born, Sydney-raised, and lives in Northeast Coast, Queensland, Australia. She lived abroad once in Colorado, where she was hugely influenced by hip-hop. Musically, her background is full of 90s Aussie rock and funk and jazz. More recently, she has been producing down-tempo electronica. Mia Muse composes in her home studio in Surfer's Paradise, and she records, produces, and mixes at the Gold Coast Conservatorium. Her music has received attention worldwide, including Australian FM radio airplay, Record of the Year nominations in 2007 and 2008, and a number one song on the Unsigned Artist Music Charts. You can find out more about Mia Muse on her MySpace page at myspace.com/MIAMUZE, or at her Windows Live page. We have links to it at stash.normal.org. Enjoy this little bit of electronic rap. This is Mia Muse with Dr. Chronic.
Dr. Chronic, the one to know, you'll find a special plan wherever you go. Professing deeds secure and made, delivered by the book of investment weed, yeah. Swift release, avoid police. The truth is that it's all about the game. Take a nice little hit of this and you won't be the same. Dr. Chronic, the friend you hold dear, attention accruing, religion and fear. Always dishing out the latest and dope. Speaking a new strain, giving us hope, y'all. I love the smell, the ding-a-ding blunt. Shit, don't you hate the random runt? He always tries to get into the past. Shooting stories by kicking some ass, yeah. I'll kick your ass. Oh, yeah. Dr. Chronic, I've known many kinds. Potential business to fuck with our minds. Always endorsing the craziest smoke. Buddha beating and making you choke, y'all. They love the beats, the easy treats. Walk in the street like criminal grip hop. Don't stop, I just got down. Stick around, turn up the sound. Let's kick it with grip hop. Dr. Chronic, yeah. Dr. Chronic. Can you help me out, man? Hello? Doc? Hello? Shit. Dr. Chronic, scan that shit, that old crap, fuck, cop is on the phone. Shoot, rap, take that, to that, live, whack, got it going on. Dr. Chronic, yay. Dr. Chronic, ooh, ooh. Let's kick it with grip hop, grip hop. Dr. Chronic. Yay, yay.
Dear Mr. President, last November you were elected on a platform of change. You promised the country reform on the political system. Well, let me tell you what Normal.org and many other Americans want changed. Marijuana laws. It was estimated that America made its 20 millionth arrest for marijuana possession this year. You want a real economic problem? How about the amount of money being spent on simple possession arrests? Incarcerating people costs taxpayers around $23,000 per year, and Normal estimates that up to $10 billion a year are spent on enforcement for mostly nonviolent offenders. Now let's imagine what would happen if marijuana was legal. Not only would we save billions each year on enforcement, but imagine the economic boost. You would produce jobs growing, selling, and tax dollars coming in from the regulation of marijuana. I'm not saying let people loose to sell on the streets. Put government regulation into tax and control at sales like alcohol. Street dealers are the problem, not a guy with a gram in his pocket. Put in harsh punishments for people who drive under the influence, and stop punishing people who enjoy marijuana safely in their home. Mr. President, if you really want change, legalize marijuana.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, party politics, social status, wealth, gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the marijuana smokers lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers. For our Normal Newsmakers today and tomorrow, we are pleased to bring you a debate in two parts about medical marijuana. Chris Goldstein, the founder of the Daily Audio Stash podcast, as well as a representative of Coalition for Medical Marijuana New Jersey and the executive director of Normal New Jersey, debates Terrence Farley on the topic of medical marijuana in New Jersey. This was presented and filmed at the Ocean County Community College on October 19th. Now, Terrence Farley is a former prosecutor and heads the Narcotics Task Force Commanders Association. For more information about this debate, check out www.cmmnj.org. We bring you now Chris Goldstein versus Terrence Farley on medical marijuana.
On my right, we have Chris Goldstein, Board of Director of the Coalition for Medical Marijuana, New Jersey. On my left, we have Terrence Farley, former Director of National Drug Prosecution Center, former director, New Jersey Division of Criminal Justice, and the former director of Ocean County Narcotics Strike Force. All right, the ground rules will be that we will ask a question. There will be a 3-minute response time and a 1-minute then rebuttal. For this first question, though, we will have just a 3-minute response time for each of you, given that it is a current breaking event today. So we'll start with directing this to Mr. Goldstein. What impact, if any, does the Department of Justice memo regarding the investigations and prosecutions in the states authorizing the medical use of marijuana have with regard to this discussion generally that we're having tonight and New Jersey's proposed legislation specifically?
In regards to what we're discussing tonight, this announcement today is landmark. It's the first time that a White House administration has supported the aspect of patients' rights and the right to safe cannabis access in the 14 states that have some type of medical marijuana law. 13 states operate an active medical cannabis program, and Arizona has medical protections for a medical necessity defense in court if you're caught with cannabis. What impact does this have? Well, the Department of Justice today has directed federal prosecutors to reallocate their resources and to take a hard look at whether it's a good choice in their resources to prosecute state-authorized medical marijuana patients and providers. In March of this year, Attorney General Eric Holder announced that such a policy would be in place, and now we have it in writing. What impact does this have? This time last year, there were 80 raids per month in places like California on medical marijuana facilities. This month, there have been 3. This has been a major shift in our federal government's policy on medical marijuana, a welcome one in the eyes of advocates like myself. And it may signal that the federal government will no longer interfere at all with state-authorized medical marijuana programs, the impact it has here in New Jersey. It has long been an argument here with the opposition to medical marijuana that we would somehow conflict with state law. But as we can see now, federal prosecutors will no longer interfere with our program. So the concern there that passing our medical marijuana bill, the Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act, this year will not have any conflict with the federal government and will be able to provide compassionate, safe marijuana access for the sick and dying residents of New Jersey who truly need it.
Thank you. Mr. Farley, same question. What impact, if any, does the Department of Justice memo have with regard to this discussion generally and New Jersey's proposed legislation specifically?
Next to none. And the reason for that is most of the prosecutions in those 14 states where there are prosecutions are not federal prosecutions. They're state prosecutions. Los Angeles, the county, for example, has more medical pot dispensaries than they have schools. And both the DA and the city attorney, and most people here probably don't understand that many states around the country, the city attorney is pretty much the city DA as well as the county DA, are both against what's going on with the pot dispensaries. And they expect somewhere in the area of 3,000 raids that will be taking place in the next year or so, because their intent is to shut down these dispensaries, because every one of them violates not only the federal law, which they violate, but they violate the California statute, which is the most liberal of all.
Thank you.
All right, the question will then go to Mr. Goldstein. What specific benefits do you see for New Jersey if the proposed legislation in the Assembly or in the Senate is ultimately passed?
The greatest benefit we're going to see right now with the medical marijuana bill is that patients will stop being arrested. Right now, we see this happening all the time here in New Jersey. Medical marijuana patients, people who choose to use cannabis therapy to alleviate the pain of cancer treatment, to alleviate the symptoms of MS, to help them through their end-of-life transition, they're arrested and they're put in jail. Right now, even though the Assembly version has been restricted, it would offer serious protections for patients. We at the Coalition for Medical Marijuana advocate most strongly that the arrest of sick and dying individuals for choosing to use cannabis therapy stop. And that is the greatest impact it will have. Secondary, we'll create a state-authorized medical marijuana program here in New Jersey. You'll need a doctor's recommendation. And after you get your doctor's recommendation, you'll need to go to the Department of Health to get a registry card. But once you have your registry card, you'll be able to go to an alternative treatment center and find economically viable, safe cannabis access here in New Jersey. The other greatest impact is for law enforcement itself. No longer will they have to wonder if they are throwing a sick and dying patient in jail. When law enforcement encounters a medical marijuana patient in the future, they will have a registry card on them, they will be easily identifiable, state law will be clear, and they will not be arrested. We'll offer a new alternative healthcare system for this state. We'll offer a scientifically proven therapy for our residents. And again, the people who suffer the most in New Jersey will begin to see the biggest impact of this.
Thank you. 1 minute rebuttal, Mr. Farley.
The people like Chris, who I call drug legalizers, have for years talked about the thousands and thousands of people who are both in federal and state prisons because they had a minuscule amount of marijuana or they were smoking a joint. And I have numerous times in debates and commentary challenged them to get me a handful because they don't exist. There are thousands of people in our jails for violating the laws, including the marijuana laws. But those people are guilty of distribution of 500, 2,000, 10,000 pounds. Nobody goes to jail for smoking a joint.
20 seconds.
Or having under 25 grams. It just doesn't happen. That is one of their, what I call, smokescreen lies.
Thank you. Mr. Farley, then what specific detriments do you see for New Jersey if the proposed legislation in either the Assembly or the Senate is passed?
It would make marijuana the only drug in the entire world that smoked. There is no legitimate drug in the entire world that is smoked, and everybody from the FDA to the AMA to the Cancer Society to the Glaucoma Society all say it's not a good drug. It's not a legal drug. It is something that gets people high. And if I want to treat people by just getting them high, well, hell, give them heroin. Give them anything they want. That's all this is. We have had for years and years pills made up of what we call cannabinoids, some of the chemicals in marijuana. They've been for sale for years. Marinol, Dravenol, nobody buys them because these people don't want a drug in this, in the form of a pill. They want to smoke marijuana, and that's what, number one, what this is all about. And the second thing is all they want to do is legalize the right to smoke dope.
Thank you. Mr. Goldstein, 1 minute rebuttal.
Well, there are many things misstated here. First of all, marijuana is not just smoked. Two of the most common delivery method for medical patients are vaporization, a new delivery method that does not actually smoke marijuana, It's been shown to be safe and effective in the treatment of HIV-associated neuropathy with HIV patients. Also, the MS Society says right here in their 2008 report, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society says that medical marijuana may reduce neuronal damage, thereby possibly limiting disease progression, perhaps as an add-on to other treatments. Vaporization and edible marijuana provide safe, effective delivery methods, and smoking marijuana has not been shown to be a detriment to any of the medical patients in 13 states. We have a truckload, more than, an archive of scientific evidence showing the medical efficacy of cannabis, and smoking cannabis has not been shown to be detrimental to anyone.
Well, it's amazing. Oh, I thought I had a rebuttal.
Oh, no. We're just single rebuttal on these items.
But I didn't have any. I started the answer, didn't I?
Started. The setup we had was question,
rebuttal,
and
I don't answer.
That was not the structure we've
set up. All right, go ahead.
Just,
I'll get to the answer anyhow.
Okay. Within a question, you're free to respond, and you have 3 minutes. I suggest you use them as you would like. Okay. Therefore, let's we got to this question, so I'll ask it over to Mr. Goldstein then. There is concern that, a little off topic, that New Jersey's medical marijuana bill could lead to broader legalization of the drug. How do you respond to these concerns?
Well, we certainly wouldn't have this discussion about a state bill to regulate medical marijuana if it didn't bring up the broader question of prohibition. We have this bill because there is federal prohibition of marijuana. States have enacted this type of legislation via ballot initiative or through the legislative process to make sure that patients are protected and to make sure that their citizens have access to something that is scientifically proven to be beneficial for their condition. Now, again, it brings up the broader question of prohibition. Why would we have to have this bill in the first place? If marijuana wasn't a Schedule I substance, this would be a non-issue. But it is an issue, and it will take a longer time to have a greater discussion about prohibition. But that's why it's so important that we pass the bill now. That discussion about broader marijuana prohibition will take years. But right now, this year, in 2009, we have a chance to pass a Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act right here in New Jersey and protect patients right now. Broader legalization is not within the medical marijuana argument. Medical patients aren't looking to get high. They're looking to survive, they're looking to live pain-free, and they're looking to have a better life than what they have without medical marijuana. And that's the life we have today. In front of the New Jersey Legislature's Health Committee, I said, and this still rings true today, what we say to patients is go to jail or move away. Folks like the narcotics officers of the state of New Jersey don't care if you have MS, cancer, or AIDS. They just care if you have marijuana. And people do go to jail. People don't end up in prison, but they do get arrested. And if you arrest someone and you start putting them in the criminal justice system and they're already dying, they're already ill, how much of an impact does that have on them? You don't have to send somebody to jail to kill them with the criminal justice system. You can just arrest them. And that's what happens every day here in New Jersey. We have Crohn's disease patients, MS patients. They contact us all the time. And right now, I think it's more important than ever. 13 states do have medical marijuana access. People do move away. They tear themselves away from their family and their friends if they have cancer, and they move to a place where a state doesn't prosecute you for choosing cannabis therapy. That's why it's important we pass the bill now. Keep people with their families. Keep people healthy. And bring about this alternative therapy that works in other states right here in New Jersey.
One minute rebuttal, Mr. Farley.
I could sit here for the next 3 hours and refute all of the arguments by going through legitimate medical studies saying everything that Mr. Goldstein said is not true. And he mentioned vaporization and edible marijuana. Ask him right now whether they would be behind a bill that had only vaporization and edible marijuana in it and no smoking, and the answer will be no. I'll support that bill tomorrow, but that's not what they're looking for. It comes back every single time that we debate this anyplace. they want to smoke it. That's why they don't use Drabinol, the pill. That's why they don't use Marinol, the pill. And as far as the vaporization, it's not even approved in the United States yet. The product is Sativex. I hope it is approved, because it will show again that they don't care about the method. They care about smoking.
Thank you, Mr. Farley.
All right. Question to Mr. Farley, then. What is the difference? You have brought up the different delivery methods, the different drugs available that are not smokable. What are the difference there, and why are those not covered under the current Schedule I narcotics? How are they available? How does that fit into this discussion of medical marijuana?
Well, we have a system called the Food and Drug Administration in the United States, which we've had since 1906. And since 1906, every drug that can be prescribed by a doctor or sold by a pharmacy has to go through an FDA approval. There is no FDA approval of smokable marijuana, and that's what they're looking to do. This vaporization, again, smoke screen. Let him say right now tonight that he would back a bill that only permits vaporization or edible marijuana, and I will go on record as saying I'll support that bill. You're not going to get that from them, because that way they can't smoke it. They want to smoke dope. This has always been their smokescreen, because, quite frankly, their ultimate goal here is to legalize marijuana and legalize a lot of other drugs. And they've said that time and time again since the 1960s. And we have tapes of all of it to prove what their position is. But when you get a situation where somebody says they can adjust their intake by smoking an unknown product grown some unknown place, and they'll regulate it, but they can't regulate it taking an FDA-approved pill. It makes no sense, just like the rest of his arguments.
Mr. Goldstein, rebuttal.
Well, again, we're encountering law enforcement pretending to be doctors here, and I think that's what Mr. Farley is doing again tonight. Marinol and dronabinol are the same substance. Marinol is only one cannabinoid, and it's actually synthetically made. It's THC, synthetic THC, and it's actually prescribed to about 300,000 people. It's not that people aren't buying it or being prescribed it. People are using Marinol successfully every day. It's just that they would rather have natural marijuana. There are two studies that actually compare marijuana with whole smoked cannabis, and both from the medically effective stance and the stance of patients themselves and how they experience the drug, they chose whole plant cannabis. He also mentioned Sativex, which is a drug that's marketed by GW Pharmaceuticals. It's available in the UK and in Europe for MS. It is in an inhaler. It's a sublingual spray. It's not vaporization. Vaporization has been proven as a safe and effective delivery method, and it is important that we highlight vaporization.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Question to you, Mr. Goldstein. What would be the process, what should the criteria be for evaluating marijuana as a drug? Mr. Farley has mentioned FDA approval process. That is what most of the medicines go through. It's recognized as a standard. What would be the process that would inform doctors, inform caretakers, inform the people delivering the product to people who would be prescribed this, and also what would inform them as far as prescription rates? How would you do a differential on this? How would the hands-on approach be to using it in the way we use other drugs in medical use?
Again, I'm not a doctor, neither is law enforcement, so I wouldn't be able to speak to the medical angle of this. But I will say, within the bill itself, if you actually read the Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act and you go through the provisions within, it very clearly lays out what the qualifying conditions are for this, what a bona fide patient relationship is. And I have to say that FDA approval is often the argument of opposition to medical marijuana, because they know it's a non-starter. Currently, FDA approval is being sought for medical medical marijuana. It's been sought since the 1970s, and it's an ongoing process. In fact, in 1988, a DEA administrative law judge, Francis Young, called marijuana one of the best non-toxic substances known to man. That, along with rulings throughout the years, have been ignored by DEA and other FDA administration officials. Now, marijuana remains a Schedule I substance. The FDA cannot even look at medical marijuana until it is moved to Schedule II in the Controlled Substances Act. But thankfully, legislators and voters have seen the science out there already. Doctors in the 13 states that recommend medical marijuana seem to have no problem finding the research for their patients who need this therapy. They find the research for them. Just like a doctor, if you walked up to a doctor and had a rare condition or were dealing with a rare cancer, your doctor, or at least you hope they would do as much research as possible to find you the best medication. And that's what doctors are doing with medical marijuana every single day in the states that allow it. When doctors are not sanctioned and are given the opportunity to recommend medical marijuana, they do, for hundreds of thousands of Americans every single day. FDA approval is a non-issue in this process. Doctors recommend it. In fact, we have a list of about 200 medical organizations that support medical marijuana here in New Jersey. The New Jersey State Nurses Association, nationally, the American College of Family Physicians. The list goes on and on and on. If all of these groups, and most of them actually ask for the FDA to look at this eventually, if most of these groups did not find value in the recommendation of medical cannabis, it would not be in place today in 13 states, and we wouldn't be discussing it here and in Pennsylvania and in Delaware and in New York. Doctors know that this is a safe, effective therapy. They use it when they have the opportunity to do so. And they should have that opportunity here in New Jersey. That's what we advocate for here.
Thank you. Mr. Farley, rebuttal.
Well, what we do know about what doctors say is, for example, in the state of Oregon, for years and years, the legislature in Oregon said, we will pass medical marijuana if the Oregon Medical Society agrees. After 10 or 15 years of debates, they finally agreed because the marijuana users and people who were trying to legalize it said about 355 people would be getting marijuana cards. In the first year, between 9 and 10,000 got them. Three doctors alone sold 3,600 of the recommendations at $350 to $500 a piece. Now the Oregon Medical Society says we made a huge mistake, and if we could take it back, we would. And who in the hell are legislators to decide the efficacy of a drug when we've had a procedure called the FDA since 1906? To me, that's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard of.
Time. Thank you. Mr. Farley, question to you. What policies will be in place? Oh, my apologies, wrong. If medical marijuana were to become legal in New Jersey, what impact would that impose on local and state police? Would there be an impact?
Oh, yeah, there'd be an impact, but more importantly, there'd be an impact on children. What you'd be doing for the first time since we've had drug prevention programs in this state, in effect, say to kids, it's okay to use marijuana because, after all, the legislature said it was okay. And I can cite you case after case where people died using marijuana instead of regular medicine that they should have used because of their condition. It usually happened when they had taken other drugs. Will it have an impact on the police? If the law goes through the way it is, the police will be regulated in who they can arrest, who they can stop, who they can prosecute. But I will tell you, in the long run, they will be able to do most of what they can do today, and that is arrest people who are dealers of major quantities of the drug.
Mr. Goldstein, in rebuttal.
No one has ever died from taking medical marijuana, ever. The toxicity rate of marijuana is zero. The LD50 rating is zero. You can't die from medical cannabis. it's not possible. That's the biggest falsehood in reefer madness I encounter, and I'm surprised to even hear it here tonight. But what impact... What impact would it have on state police? It's called the Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act. And I believe policemen and those in law enforcement actually have a deep vein of compassion within each individual. I would not want to put a bulletproof vest on and stand between you and the most violent members of society, but police do. How do they feel when they arrest someone with cancer or MS and send them to jail because they're following the letter of the law? This Compassionate Use Medical Marijuana Act is compassion for law enforcement. No longer will they have to wake up in a sweat at night thinking about the AIDS patient that they put back into prison. No longer will cops have to wonder about the impact they're having. They can just read the registry card and let the medical patients go.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Goldstein, question to you. Should private insurers, Medicare and Medicaid, be required to cover medical marijuana treatment in New Jersey?
In New Jersey, no. I don't think that that's a good stance to take at the get-go. As medical marijuana evolves in America, it is my hope that one day it will be an approved, insured method of treatment. But right now, we don't ask insurance companies to cover your Tylenol if you need to go get ibuprofen or if you need to go to the store to get a cold medication. You don't apply for your insurance company to cover over-the-counter medication. That's what I consider medical marijuana to be. It's a non-toxic substance. You can never purchase an amount of medical marijuana that can kill you. So that's opposed to ibuprofen. All of us could walk into a 7-Eleven or a Wawa right now and purchase enough ibuprofen or codeine to kill us. But even in an alternative treatment center, you could never walk away with enough marijuana to kill you because it's impossible to do so. So I consider it more of an over-the-counter medication and would not advocate strongly for insurance companies to be involved. Without federal prohibition and with a well-regulated medical marijuana program within the state, the cost of cannabis is much below the underground market value. So it becomes a very cost-effective medication once you take prohibitions away. People often think that marijuana is very expensive, especially for good marijuana, but what you're dealing with is the cost of prohibition, not really the cost of pot. In a regulated medical marijuana market like California, and I have seen this in person and also in places like Oregon and Colorado, oftentimes the marijuana is free. I've seen many patients who receive their marijuana for free from co-ops, from collectives, from dispensaries. So in some cases now, it's not as much of an argument. The cost is low enough that insurance companies wouldn't have to get involved. I'm not sure for the same reason that pharmacists could not handle medical marijuana, because it is still a federal Schedule I substance in the Controlled Substances Act, that any insurance company could until we saw some movement in those federal guidelines. So one day, I hope so. But more than, with increased research, because that's the other thing about medical marijuana in New Jersey, we have universities and colleges and medical centers. In California, medical marijuana is well studied. They're coming up with new methods of treatment every single day. And if we could find those new treatments out there, especially when it comes to anti-cancer and anti-tumor, maybe one day insurance companies will be helping you with a THC derivative that will help cure your cancer. But today, we don't need an insurance company involved with the medical marijuana dispensaries, because under a well-regulated, well-run program, it is less dangerous than buying Tylenol over the counter, and it is certainly going to be less costly than the underground market.
Thank you. Rebuttal, Mr. Farley.
Well, as usual, Mr. Goldstein will make up any kind of argument he wants. First thing he says, they're getting it for free in California. Well, they're supposed to be clinics in California where you get it for free, but they're getting $6,000 to $8,000 a pound. All of the major prosecutions in the state of California are because the people who have the medical dispensaries, as they're called out there, make an average of $4 to $6 million a year. And every month or two you see some major federal case with someone going to prison, which is why Eric Holder, in his comments today, didn't say the states couldn't go after these people. He didn't want the federal government to be spending as much time and effort. They're not going to have to, because the state law enforcement officers are facing such a crisis that they're reacting to it now and making the arrests.
Thank you.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. I leave you today with a reminder that we'll be back tomorrow with part two of Chris Goldstein's debate on medical marijuana there in New Jersey, and with more news and interviews that you can use for the cannabis community. If you have any comments or questions for Normal or the Daily Audio Stash, you can always send them to me at stash@normal.org. And don't forget to check the videos on our blog at stash.normal.org. Some great stuff in there, including a look at LA Normal and their recent letter writing campaign. We'll be following up on all the votes that take place tomorrow on Election Day, so check out stash.normal.org for your latest information. And don't forget to support Normal by going to secure.normal.org/join to make your donation today. Thanks for downloading the podcast, and until tomorrow, take care of each other, tokers.